I'd love to be here. Will this be live?
No, it's pre-recorded. Oh, right, so okay. Are we ready to start? How did you sleep last night?
I slept very well, actually, which is quite unusual.
Do you often wake up in the middle of the night?
Yes. I seem to see 2:30 in the morning with astounding regularity. I'll be sleeping, I think, fairly soundly, and in my head it may be, you know, 5 or 6 in the morning, judging by how I feel before I've opened my eyes. I think I've slept well. But then I'll open my eyes, and mysteriously it's always 2:30. And there it is, taunting me, the clock saying, here we are again. What I've tried to do recently is just, it's an obvious thing to say, is try to get back to sleep by forcing myself to relax.
Forcing yourself to relax?
Yes.
Is that possible?
Well, it does work, or it has worked. A number of things run through my head in that moment. I think you're going to be so tired if you don't get some more sleep now. Come on, you just have to relax. Just don't think about the fact you're awake and you've got lots to do tomorrow.
What is going through your mind when you first wake up?
Well, these days it's frustration at the 2:30 thing. I mean, I've laughed, actually, sometimes, perhaps out loud, because it's beyond parody now that it just happens.
Do you turn on the radio?
No, I used to always turn on the World Service during the night. I'm out of the habit of turning the radio on because it used to be too distracting. I know that lots of people are soothed by it, and I used to be. But maybe the World Service just was making more and more interesting programmes, because I would then get involved in what was going on, rather than it being a sort of background, low-level drone, just a human voice that you weren't really concentrating on the content. I would start thinking, oh, that's really interesting, oh, I'll turn that up. And then before you know it, you've heard the 2 o'clock news, the 3 o'clock news, and the 4 o'clock news, and then you're thinking, well, it's going to be 5 o'clock, I'll just wait for Radio 4 to come on, and that's stupid.
But I guess it's also work for you.
There is a bit of that, yeah. Obviously, the World Service, by definition, takes you to parts of the world that we on domestic radio tend to underreport. And so there was that element of discovery. And yes, you would start thinking, oh, we should be doing a piece from that part of the world. Oh, that's a very interesting angle. Then you start trying to force yourself to remember to have the conversation with your editor the next day.
And do you ever kind of get up and do something else? Or do you tend to lie there and think, I need to get back to sleep?
No, I can't lie there. It's just the most soul-destroying thing. And everything looks more grim in life at 4 in the morning. And I do find, in fact, if my schedule allows, I can wake up at 1:30, 2:30, spend 2 or 3 productive hours reading the news on the web or reading a book or whatever, and then become tired again and go back to sleep at about 5 and wake up again about 6:30, 7 o'clock. This is fascinating, isn't it? But I think what everyone says about being good advice, I mean, that business about allowing yourself properly to rest before bed and not just kind of, you know, dash there at the end of the day and hope that sleep will come. And to properly wind down in the evening if you can is really important. And when I do that properly, it's fine. But if I haven't really processed lots of stuff... The other day, I kid you not, I had a dream where I had Neil Kinnock's diaries.
Don't want to know this.
No, there was nothing more to it than that, except throughout the dream I had this pressure about I had to get Neil Kinnock's diaries back to him. I shouldn't have had them. I didn't even open them, which is good of me. And then everyone who was coming up to me in my dream, I was very distracted and saying, no, I can't talk to you about that. I've got to get Neil Kinnock back his diaries. What the hell is that about?
Well, the reason we're talking about sleep is because, for 1 week only, we set up a special phone line for our listeners with insomnia. We had calls, and then we had calls from Roz.
Oh, hi. It's now 3:25.
And she called again.
Oh, hello. I've just been lying here in the dark.
And, yeah, she called again.
This is about the fourth time I've been awake.
Rosalind Bufton has rarely slept longer than 2 hours straight since she was a child. She's now in her late 60s. So what could IPM do to help Roz? Well, spend the night with her, of course. And I took with me another listener, who happens to be a specialist from the insomnia clinic at the Royal London Hospital, Dr. Hugh Selsick.
There are huge numbers of insomniacs and very, very few sleep doctors around.
We're on the train, on the way to Roz's. I think he thinks this idea is a bit strange, but he's too polite to say. So instead, he says...
Most of my experience of people's sleep is either on a chart with an EEG and all sorts of scientific data, or it's second and third-hand information from the person.
We met Rose at her bed and breakfast in Somerset.
Nice to meet you.
Imagine suffering long-term sleep problems and having your very own sleep doctor getting up with you in the night and offering advice.
Wonderful. To have somebody like Hugh to say, well, you know, you should be doing this. It's a big comfort. And also, I think it gives you confidence. I've always been a poor sleeper. My mother says that even as a child, when she came into the bedroom, I would be standing up in the cot, ready, raring to go.
And then she told myself and Hugh her theory about how her sleeping trouble began at boarding school in the 1950s.
I was put in a dormitory with a little girl called Hazel Bunn. And Hazel Bunn had asthma. And in the middle of the night, she had this terrible asthma attack. So I rushed off down to the matron. So matron came and propped her up with pillows and was pressing her chest in, out, you see. The other girls in the dormitory were fast asleep, you know, they hardly sort of noticed any of this. Unfortunately for Hazel, she kept having these asthma attacks. And I think because the matron didn't like being disturbed in the middle of the night, she taught me how to sit Hazel up and give her the in-out breathing because she knew I was a light sleeper and that I was Hazel's night watchman, if you like.
Rose was expecting her sleep patterns to get better, but it never did get any better. Not at university, not after getting married and having four children, not after getting divorced, and not after setting up a B&B.
Sometimes I get very sort of angry with myself. I think, well, why can't I sleep?
Of course, Rose has had plenty of advice over the years, and she's tried peppermint tea, hot baths. At one time, she asked her doctor for medication.
I knew that that was the only way that I could be sure of getting a decent sleep. But all the time I was taking them, I sort of had this guilt thing, you know, because I thought, I shouldn't be doing this, really. But as soon as I felt a bit stronger, I said, OK, I'm coming off these, which I did.
Rose says she's not good for much after 7 p.m. But she's lucky in that she doesn't suffer the paralysing exhaustion in the day like most insomniacs and like many of the listeners who contacted our phone line.
It's 1:45. I'm not asleep still. Fifth night running.
I'm lying here. I keep thinking about all the things I've got to do. It's really annoying because tomorrow I know I won't be able to do the things as well because I just won't have had enough sleep.
It's a very, very common disorder. And the majority of people who suffer with it suffer in silence. They don't seek help. Or when they do seek help, very often the doctor doesn't know what help to give them. There are hundreds of different triggers. It could be stress. It could be a relationship breakdown. It could be noisy neighbours. And sometimes people can never really identify a particular trigger. I speak to patients who've had insomnia for many years. They can quite often identify a cause, but of course that's long in the past. And then why is the insomnia continuing now?
I go to bed around about 10 o'clock.
You go to bed, you watch TV, you might read.
Dr. Selsick asked Rose to fill out a sleep diary before we arrived.
I need to sleep at 10, but I do like to go to bed because I feel...
The other thing that Rose worries about is whether sleeping badly long-term is damaging her body, and in particular, her memory.
There isn't any real evidence that insomnia causes any severe physical illnesses. The mortality rate for people with insomnia is the same as people without insomnia. There have been some studies that have shown increases in blood pressure, but not all studies have supported that finding. But no, there's no really strong evidence linking it to dementia.
It's a lovely room. It's light.
He asked to see Rose's bedroom.
Now, this is wonderful.
It's 10:34 p.m.
Isn't that just brilliant? All I've got to do is put my hand out and touch the clock.
And do you want to know the time?
Oh, yes.
So when you're waking up,
yes,
you need...
Yes, all the time. I want to know the time.
Generally, we discourage clock watching. There would be lots of things in this room that I would like to change. One would be having the talking clock that lets you know exactly what time it is facing your bed. Having the radio and all the CDs,
yes.
All the books, and particularly the TV. There are lots of things to do in this room when you're awake.
We asked Rose to keep an audio diary.
And now it is recording, is it? Can you tell?
Yeah.
And she records several times throughout the night.
It's 1:29 a.m. The temperature...
I've got the window open and I can hear the rain very softly falling on the conservatory roof. Again, I'm rambling on. I always seem to ramble in the night. But actually, I don't feel too tired. So I'm just hoping that there'll be an interesting programme on the radio that'll send me off to sleep again. OK, night-night.
As well as doing her own recording, she agreed to wake Dr. Selsick and I when she wakes up so that he can offer her advice. No, that knock needs to be louder. I'm a very heavy sleeper, and I may be dreaming about Neil Kinnock's diaries or something.
I warn you, if Margaret Thatcher wins on Thursday...
Get rolled into a Richard's dog.
I don't think anyone with Marxist, or any candidates, really.
In the end, Roz only wakes us up once in the middle of the night. She says she didn't like to. Anyway, Dr. Selzig says the worst thing you can do is lie there worrying. He suggests getting up and reading a book or getting on with something until you feel sleepy again. He also takes Roz through a relaxation exercise, which some of his patients find useful.
We'll start with your eyes. I want you to squeeze your eyes as tight as you can and hold it. And relax.
Actually, Dr. Selzig thinks Roz is a good sleeper. She just doesn't need very much sleep.
We'll go through your body, ask you to tense a particular part of your body for a few seconds.
Roz usually gets up at 5 a.m. So she wakes me again, and I do my very best to ask her about how her night was.
But it's 5 o'clock and you're bright as a button.
I know. It's funny, isn't it?
And so how did you sleep?
Well, I slept intermittently.
Dr. Selzig and I had to go back to bed for a bit, and we greeted Roz a few hours later at 8:30 a.m. Of course, she hadn't gone back to bed. I asked her what it was like having us there.
It was really weird, because my bedroom is my inner sanctum. It's a very private place. But it has been helpful, and I'm very grateful for that. I really am, because when you can talk about these things, and then you can get somebody who is an expert telling you that, in fact, you're not abnormal in any way, I'm not so worried at all.